let's see, what did we talk about last week? It feels so long ago. Proverbs. We talked about finances in Proverbs. And the week before that, we talked about the love of money. I hate to break it to you guys. If you're wealthier, it's just harder to be a Christian. Just is what it is. Jesus is very clear about that, right? It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, of course, what does Jesus say when he's at, like, so then, of course, they ask him, who then can enter the kingdom? And he says, you know, with God, all things are possible. So it's not like it's impossible to do that. It's just more difficult. The more money you have, the harder it is to do what God wants. It just is one of the facts of human life. I've talked about stewardship several times in the past year. We did, I don't know, I say a past year, but it all sort of blurs together at this point. Could be 3 years ago for all I know. We did a class on spiritual disciplines where I talked about stewardship. I've done another sermon on it. Just looking back at my own sermons, I keep a record of them. So I have talked about it in a general sense over the past year, several years. The question, of course, is more specifically about money, right? Now, the concept of stewardship, I think most of us understand. Genesis 44:1, he commanded the steward of it. This is talking about Joseph, right? Joseph commanded the steward of his house, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack, on and on and on. Joseph was not the one who did that. It was all his stuff. And Joseph said, hey, you person do this, right? The steward of his house. Daniel 1:11-12, Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. And he's talking about here, right, about what? You guys eat your stuff, we'll eat our stuff, we'll see who's healthier at the end of it. But again, it's not the people in charge doing these things, it's the steward, right? The steward who's going to carry all this out, who's going to actually do the work. Titus 1:7, for an overseer as God's steward must be above reproach. And then he goes into requirements for being an elder. And again, this idea of steward is the one who is doing the actual thing, right? He's the one who's doing the stuff. As opposed to the one who owns the stuff. So in the first case, Joseph was the owner of the stuff. In the second case, it was the Babylonian ruler who owned the stuff, who had the stuff. And in this case, literally owned Daniel and the four guys, right? He literally owned the four of them as they were slaves. And then, of course, in the last thing, it's God who owns the church, right? He's the owner of the church, and then somebody's been put in charge of the task. So stewards of those who are put in charge of managing something that doesn't belong to them. And I think we can understand that point fairly easily. Now, when we come to the New Testament, then, we think about some of the idea of ownership. Specifically, the idea of ownership. That's not just the New Testament. It's really all throughout the Bible. Who owns what? That's the question. And here's the great difficulty. It's not just this lesson, but it's a difficulty in talking about money in general is part of our culture, baked into our culture, is the concept of personal ownership. That's just a thing that is very built in to our society. Who owns what? That's the primary question. And then once you own stuff, you try not to let it go. You lease it, you rent it, you do all sorts of stuff, but you as the owner, right? And we could talk about this from a perspective of land. We could talk about this from the perspective of even if we wanted to go super deep into money, stocks. And really the question of ownership is at the heart of the American economy, not just the American economy, but economies in general. So when the Bible talks about ownership, 1 Timothy 6:6-7, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. This kind of goes into what we were talking about this morning about being sojourners, right? The stuff exists. It just exists here on this earth. We show up, we use it for a bit, and then we leave. But the stuff stays here, right? Even our bodies, in a certain sense, like the soul, okay, is the soul created a conception? Did it exist prior to that? I don't know. God puts the soul, however that works, into the body, in the womb, and then the formation of the body. But when we die, we don't take the body with us either, right? The stuff that the body is made of, we don't even own that. We're put into the body, then the body dies, and we leave. Nothing that is in this space gets taken with us. We're just sort of here for a bit, right? Ecclesiastes 5:19, everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. Solomon had a lot of faults, but he understood, right? Who God has given wealth and possession and power to enjoy them. Now, he talked a lot about the guy who had been given wealth and possession and not the power to enjoy them, and that was a grievous evil in his eyes. But Solomon understood it's the gift of God, right? It was from God, these things, this wealth and the possessions. And that meant more, I think, coming from Solomon than from a lot of people. 1 Corinthians 10:26, of course, this is a quote from an Old Testament passage. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So when we think about ownership, who owns what? Well, God owns everything in the most absolute sense. And he really does, he sort of leases it out to us for a while or rents it out to us for a bit. Even people who don't acknowledge God, right? God gives them gifts. And I think as Jesus said, he sends rain on the rich and the poor and the lost and the righteous, and the sun shines on both of them. And he gives us these things for a bit. And then when we die, that's it. And it goes back to, well, in Solomon's case, when he talks a lot in Ecclesiastes, where does this stuff go? It goes to the next person. Might be the heirs of that person, might be the state, might be... it just goes to random people, whoever, right? But the stuff just passes from hand to hand. We don't own any of it in an absolute sense, in a real sense. We are managers of stuff. We have it for a bit, and it's ours to use. So, let's talk about the parable of talents. This will be a lot of the lesson. We usually use this to teach about the English word talents, and it's a nice sort of transition from the monetary unit to the English concept of talents, how we use that word. But the parable's about money. When you read the parable, they are given 10 amounts of money, or 5 amounts of money, or 1 amount of money. That's what the parable's about. So if we truly have the mindset that everything belongs to God, then our money does as well, right? So let's read this parable. Matthew 25, beginning, we're going to read it in chunks. This is not all of it. We're going to read it in chunks. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. This word, we're going to come back to this word later on. The word entrusted, this is a key word in stewardship, right? That I am going to trust you with my stuff. When we drop our kids off at babysitters, we are entrusting our children to the babysitter, right? They're not their kids. It's not their kids. They have been entrusted with managing the children for a period of time. This word entrust, the amount of faith that is placed in the one who has control over the thing, whatever it happens to be. Now, in this case, it's money, right? He called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one, he gave 5 talents. To another, 2. To another, 1. Each according to his ability. Now, it's interesting. He obviously knew them pretty well, the servants. He knew their ability. He knew what sort of things they were capable of. So this is not a relationship between strangers. He went away. He received the 5 talents, went at once and traded with them and made 5 talents more. So also the one who had 2 made 2 talents more. The one who received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. And after a long time, the master of the servants came and settled accounts with them. We're familiar with the parable, obviously. Again, we use this to talk about, you know, the talents that we have. But in a very real sense, Jesus is talking about money here. I'm going to give you this amount of money. So the idea of trading it, what is he doing? Well, he's buying and selling things maybe. I don't know. I don't think they had anything equivalent to the stock market necessarily. But he's using the market, right? He's buying and selling and trading goods in order to make a profit. That's what he's doing. He's managing the money. And the guy with 2 does it. And the guy with the 1, he has the attitude, of course, we know. Well, as long as I don't lose this money, it'll be fine. I'll just keep the money, right? We keep reading. He who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I've made 5 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Keep this phrasing in mind, because we'll come back to this phrasing. This idea of you have been faithful over a little bit, I will set you over much. This is going to be repeated later. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had the two talents, came forward and said the same thing. You gave me two, I made you two more. And he says the same thing to him, right? You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Does anybody know who the richest person in the world is currently? I think it's Bezos. How do you say his name? Bezos? Whatever. The Amazon guy. I think the Amazon guy is the richest. I don't know the actual figure. I should have looked it up ahead of time. Let's say 70 billion. I don't know if that's right. Could be. It's probably close to 70 billion. How much is that compared to the entirety of the universe? I mean, it seems like a lot to us, obviously. $70 billion is, well, it's the ratio is so close as to actually be zero compared to all the master owns. You have been faithful over a little bit. And so us, we of course, none of us are even close to that. Even if you have a net worth of $1 million, let's say, you have been given such a pittance of the master's wealth. Such a small amount of the master's wealth. But what does he expect of you? To be faithful with that amount, whatever it happens to be. And you think, well, I definitely don't have as much as so-and-so who has $1 million. I only have whatever it is that I have. What am I going to do in the kingdom? Even the guy who has $1 million has basically nothing compared to what God has. He just wants you to be faithful with that little bit, whatever it happens to be. And what is the faithfulness leading to, supposed to lead to? It's supposed to lead to an increase in the master's wealth. Now, we'll talk about some specifics of the parable after we read the whole thing. He also had received the one talent, came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed, so I was afraid. I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servants. Slothful meaning what? Lazy, you lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I think we know what that is referring to. To describe the concept of stewardship, and this is what this parable is about, right? Stewardship of the kingdom. And he's comparing the kingdom to this. He talks about money. What we do with the money we have. How we act with the money we have. And there's two points that are immediately evident in the parable. One, it doesn't matter how much money you have. That's immediately apparent in the parable. It just doesn't matter what the actual dollar amount of your worth is, your net worth, however much you have in the bank. It doesn't matter. For the purposes of being a faithful steward, that number is irrelevant. What's the relevant number? Or really concept? What are you doing with the money that you have? That's the relevant part, right? What are you doing with it? Now, the second thing that is immediately apparent is that the master, our stewardship, is going to affect our eternal destination. The stewardship is not a trivial matter, right? It's important. It matters. I didn't mean to do that. I have to pull this out because it's not 4 o'clock. It's 5:35. So one of the themes of this series is the idea that we need to adjust our thinking about money. And that's one of the things I'm really trying to get us to do. It's not the most important thing in the world. The money itself is just not. We looked at last week in Proverbs, he listed 7 or 8 things that are better than money, more important than money. It's not the biggest indicator of happiness. This is one of my favorite statistics in the whole world. I don't know. I just find this statistic to be so enlightening. At least in America, actually it's West, no, it's America, it's an America-specific stat. There's a definite cutoff as people trace money and happiness, and you do this through various studies, that the more, up to a certain point, it sort of goes like this, that you have more money and your happiness goes up. And then at a certain point, there's a cutoff where your happiness starts doing this and your money does this. And more money does not equate to more happiness. It just doesn't. Now, that number, as of, I think it was 2 years ago, that number is 70,000 per year for a family of four, 70,000 per year for a family of four. Once you get past that amount, money does not equate to happiness. Now, it's interesting, the money even below that's not equating to happiness. That's the number that seems to be that you have all of your, you don't have to worry about needs, you don't have to worry about major expenses, you have enough to cover anything that comes up, you don't have to worry about food and shelter, you have all the needs met. Once your needs are met, a person's needs are met, after that, money just doesn't equate to happiness. Now, you're unhappy if you don't have your needs met. That's an obvious thing. So when we think about the race in this country to accumulate gobs and gobs of wealth, because that's what happens, and some people are better at it than others, obviously, but in this country, there is a culture of wealth building. At a certain point, it's just not going to make your life any more meaningful or any better. Once your needs are met, essentially, once you don't have to worry about money, then what makes you happy? It's not more stuff. It's not more things. It's going to be stuff like, do you have a good marriage? Or what about your relationship with your kids? Or do you enjoy what you do for work? Or do you have, and there's been a lot of studies about the correlation between religiosity, that's not the right word, the level of religiousness that people have and their happiness. These are the things that matter more than money, right? So in this lesson, what do we need to realize? Our money, like everything else, isn't even really ours. And that's going to affect our happiness level, I think. That's going to affect our life satisfaction. If we realize that the stuff that I have is not really mine, it is something that I have been given for, let's say I live 80 years. I've been given this stuff for 80 years. What am I going to do with it for 80 years? And then when I die, it's gone and I'm done. What have I done with the money that I have? Ephesians 3, 1 through 4. For this reason, I, Paul, a prisoner for Christ Jesus on behalf of you Gentiles, assuming that you have heard of the stewardship of God's grace that was given to me for you, how the mystery was made known to me by revelation, as I have written briefly. When you read this, you can perceive my insight into the mystery of Christ. What was Paul a steward of? Now, this isn't money related. What was he a steward of? There's several things in this text. He was a steward of knowledge, mostly the mystery of God's grace, right? That was what he was steward. He was given this knowledge, this understanding. And so what did God expect of him? 1 Corinthians 4, 1 through 2. This is how one should regard us as servants of Christ, as stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. Not optional. Maybe you should be faithful as a steward if it seems easy or convenient or doable. It is required of stewards that they be found faithful. And as we know, faithful means what? That you're going to manage the thing well. What did God expect of Paul's stewardship? That he would take the knowledge that he had received and use it to the benefit of God's kingdom. And that would be teaching and preaching and all the things that he did. From a money perspective, what does that mean? If I'm going to use the money that God has given me to the benefit of God's kingdom, what does that look like? How does this apply? Oh, I just said that. Now, remember, I've said this so many times and I'm going to keep saying it till I drill it in our heads. Money is not really anything. It's a proxy for the value of real things. The things that are real in general are three things. There's the objects, there's services, and there's experiences. Those are the things that we generally spend money on. Is we either want an object like a phone, or we want a service, somebody to do something for me, or we want an experience, something that is not really replaceable. That's why we take trips, right? That's why we go to various on vacations to have the experience. The value of money, and I've said this over and over, is only what can be accomplished with it. That's the entire value of money. What are you gonna? If it just sits in a bank account, it's not doing anything. It's not accomplishing. It's just a number on a screen, right? Even if it's a big stack of cash, it has no real value. So when we think about being stewards of God's money, we must ask the question, whatever amount of money that you have, what can be accomplished with that money? And for the guy who has 5 talents, that's going to be different than the guy who had 2. The guy who had 2 could not accomplish as much as the guy who had 5. You just couldn't. If they're all things being equal, if you have X amount of money, you can accomplish, and that's what we need to think about. What are you going to accomplish with that money? And again, it falls into the same categories, right? Righteous things or objects to be purchased, righteous causes or people to be supported, or righteous experiences or service to render. Those are the categories. That's what we would use the money on. Things, services, or experiences. For example, an example of spending money on an experience would be, you spend X amount of money to send your kids to a Bible camp. Okay, that's an experience. That's what that is. They are spending time. What are they doing? Hopefully learning about God, developing godly relationships, learning about God and drawing closer to Him. Okay, you've spent X amount of money, whatever it happens to be, for that experience, as opposed to spending that money on any number of other things. Objects, things to be purchased, the question we need to have. The things that we buy, what is the value of those things to the kingdom? That's an important question, I think. The stuff, the physical objects that we buy, what does that benefit God? Does it benefit? And a lot of things, I think, maybe sometimes they don't. And I think it's hard for me too. This is a hard thing to wrestle with. Coming to terms with the fact that in all likelihood, most of us mismanage some of God's money. We do. Because we use it in ways that are not beneficial to Him. I think all of us are probably guilty of that. Unless you don't have any money. If you don't have a good job, Gideon, you have not done that yet. But it'll happen. Because that's what we do, right? We mismanage. And that's what it is. We're mismanaging. Oh, I can't believe I just hit that button. Ah, I hit the escape button instead of the forward button. Although, to be honest, I'm sort of amazed that doesn't happen more often. Go away. Guys, silence your phones. Thank you. He brought me back. There we go. Now, so this applies both to the church as a group and to Christians as a whole, right? You think about individually and as a group. I'm trying to silence my phone here, and it's not working very well. You know, it says it's silenced, but you all heard that ding, so I don't know what's happening over here. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks is one who speaks the oracles of God. Whoever serves is one who serves by the strength that God supplies. In order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to Him belong glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. That idea of dominion, what is that idea? Dominion implies rulership or ownership. He deserves all of the rulership and all of the ownership. And these two things that are given, in this case, it's speaking and serving. You're only speaking the things God has given you to say. You're only serving by the strength that God has given you. This would apply to money as well, right? Collectively, we have an obligation with our money to do what? To glorify God. It's very exciting. It's all very exciting. That's what we have an obligation to do, to glorify God with our money as a group and as individuals. Now, money is one of the easiest ways to serve one another and help one another. It just is. And this is why we use money as a concept, as a society. Why we use money is it's easier to deal with than the objects. So instead of carrying around 10 cows, you can just carry around the equivalent in a coin. And instead of giving everybody the cows to pay for your stuff, you just give, and it's so much easier, right? And that's the same way with helping people. I think a lot of times it's easier to help people with money than it is with stuff. But here's the problem. I think sometimes we do that. We give them money, whoever it is that needs help, and we put the onus of the stewardship on them, right? If I give you the money and you waste the money, that's your fault. And we can have an attitude of sort of passing the buck on responsibility. instead of helping as we could help. We just sort of give our money and that's the deal, and then I'm done and I don't have to think about it anymore. And if somebody else mismanages it, that's their problem and it's not on me. And we sort of do that instead of going through the work of thinking about how we can serve. And that's a difficult thing. Luke 12, 41 through 48, Peter said, Lord, who are you? Or Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom the master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes back. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his house, or all his possessions, rather. Maybe you're not the manager of the church, but again, what part of God's wealth do you manage? Maybe you don't manage all of our money. I'm so glad I don't have to do that. But I do have to manage some of God's money, the money that is in my possession. And this is why the parable of the talents is so powerful. That parable does not say that any of them were inferior. Any of the three guys. They weren't inferior to each other. They were given according to their ability, and that is fine. It just is what it is. And one of them didn't make as much as the other, and that was okay. He was not given less of a reward for that. You manage $30,000 a year. That's fine. What are you doing with it? You manage $10,000 a year. Okay, what are you doing with it? Maybe you manage $1 million a year. Okay, what are you doing with it? But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, in an hour when he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. That does not sound very pleasant. That servant who knew his master's will but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, much will be required, and from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. And this is why I said at the beginning of this lesson, it's harder to be a Christian if you have more money. Because what does that mean God expects of you? What does that mean he expects of you? More. He expects more of you because you have more of that. That applies, now, this applies obviously to money, and it applies to talent, and it applies to time, and it applies to ability, and it applies to, yes, all of these areas of life. But as this is a series on money, we're going to focus on the money part of it. If you have been entrusted with a lot of God's money, then God expects much of you. And it's why we need to be very careful about our love of money. Why we began this series with a sermon on the love of money. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, and many have ensnared themselves by it and been led astray from the faith. Be very careful if you wish for a lot of money, because that will put a stricter expectation on you from God. And maybe that's fine. Maybe you're able to handle that. Maybe that's something you're good at. Okay, that's good. I'm glad. But if you're not, then be careful about how you think about these things. So we'll close with this. What time is it? Good time to wrap up. As a family, how do you divide money? Do you divide money? So some families, the her money and the his money, right? What's the danger in that? Once you've started doing that, what's the danger? Well, if you're dividing it between her and him, I'm not sure you're going to think about it as God's money, right? I definitely don't think you're going to be thinking about it in terms of God's money if you're already dividing it amongst the family members, right? We need to be careful about how we think about money. How purposeful are you about money? How planned and intentional? The word manager is a good word. If you want to be a good manager, maybe you should have a plan instead of just sort of winging it. And that's the problem. I have my wallet. Yes, I did not forget my wallet at home. The primary problem with this thing, I love this thing so much because I hate all the stuff that comes from having money, right? Like this is just, it has all of my money right here, and it's so easy. But what? It's also easy to do what with this thing? I don't think about it. I'm not planning it. I'm not intentional about it. The money goes into my account and it magically appears. And whenever I swipe this thing, then I get to have the thing that I was purchasing. And before you know it, I've spent all my money and I don't have any more because I wasn't tracking it, right? If I'm thinking about it as God's money and God is worth the amount of work that I can put into it, and I'm thinking about it as a managing of an account that isn't mine, belongs to somebody else, maybe I should have a plan for the money. Be intentional about the money. Instead of just being sort of laissez-faire, whatever. If I have enough, that's great. And if I don't, then whatever. It's not your money, right? And a good way to think about it is, if somebody had you be in charge of something of theirs, how would you consider that responsibility, right? How would you consider, and babysitting is a classic one, if somebody put you in charge of their kids for a while, would you be careful about it? Would you be thinking about it? Would you be intentional about it? Would you be trying to do a good job? Maybe apply some of those ideas to money. Being careful and trying to do a good job and having an idea of what you're doing. Do you use money as a replacement for good works? This is a danger, right? Especially for those of us with a lot of money. I have more money than I have time, or I have more money than I have skills, or I have more money than I have ability, or I have more money than I have whatever. So I'll just give money and that'll be it and I'll be done. Hooray! I think God still expects us to use the other things that we have, doesn't he? He still expects us to serve and to love and to encourage and to meet with the saints and to lift one another up and build up. This is what we talked about this morning, the speech that is building up and fits the occasion and gives grace. That's not suddenly not applicable if you gave a lot of money to the plate this morning, right? We could do it the other way around too, though. I really want to keep all my money, so I'll just use a lot of my time, or I'll spend a lot of effort, or I'll do a lot of good things. And that way, since I did all these good things, I don't have to give God any of my money. That's not a good attitude either. Either he gets all of you, or he doesn't. Either you are wholly devoted to him, or you're not. What are you accomplishing? And this is the final consideration, right? I would encourage everybody over the next month. Now, we've done this several points in our lives, married life. I've never done it on my own. Before Tracy, I never did this. Over the next month, track what you spend. Sit down. It's going to take some effort, and maybe you already do this, in which case, great. Track what you spend it on, and at the end of the month, ask yourself, what percentage of my money did I spend in pursuit of a righteous thing? Now, there's a lot of righteous things, obviously. If you're buying food for your family, guess what? That's a righteous thing, right? Because we need to provide for our family. Probably paying the rent on your house is a good thing to do, right? You want to provide shelter. So that's a broad thing, righteousness. But I think that we will be surprised how much money ends up going to things that really have no connection to righteousness at all. There's no connection to any good work that can be done, or anything that was helping somebody, or anything that was furthering my relationship with God, or anything that was fulfilling a command of God. All of these are various categories of righteousness. If you never track it, you'll just never know. We need to be intentional about money, because God has given us for a brief period of time whatever it is that he's given you. It's different than he's given me. He has put us in charge of a particular slice of his wealth, which, let's be clear, what's his wealth? All of it is his wealth. So he's given us a particular slice of that wealth, and he expects us to manage it well. And if we're not thinking about it and being intentional, I've said this so many times, and some people have started mocking me for it, but you know who you are. Intentionality is so important. If you're not intentional about spending your money for God's benefit, you probably are not going to spend your money for God's benefit. We need to be thinking about these things, because man, he thought about us, didn't he? when he sent his son to die for us, he was thinking about us and how from the very beginning of the world, from the very first point when man sinned in Genesis 3, we see in the seeds of God's promises and punishments to Adam and Eve and the devil, we see the seeds of a plan that he began to sow even all the way back then, that he was working for our benefit. I think we owe him the same.